The moment where I know I have a lyric is when I'm deeply uncomfortable.
So you're in New York right now?
I'm in New York, yes.
That's awesome.
Been here for almost 2 weeks now. And it's very new for me. I think I've spent like a majority of my time in Los Angeles, but I'm really falling in love with it here.
Yeah, I feel like I can handle New York in doses, personally. I'm from an island, so it's like the complete opposite spectrum, but yeah. So thank you for taking the time. I start out every episode by just reading a short bio so that the listeners can just get to know you a little bit before you tell us more about yourself, but I'm going to do that and hope that I don't screw anything up.
Okay.
So my guest today is Dylan Dunlap. Dylan projects pop in widescreen, soundtracking a heartfelt personal story, and his music finds him learning to understand a developmental condition, wrestling with mental health, and navigating relationships. The Los Angeles-based singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, producer, and advocate holds nothing back. Dylan's releases have earned him tens of millions of streams on Spotify. He's released 5 EPs, many singles, and just shared his most recent project, When You're Feeling Blue, on May 12th, which is the first release under your own label, East Magnolia Records.
Wow.
All that sounds right?
I swear, I didn't pay you to say that. very kind. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and so you and I very first met in New York City, playing a SoFar show. I don't know if you remember, in 2019, my husband and I were playing that show in New York, along with Daryl Ron, who is one of my recent guests as well.
Wow.
But yeah, I remember being like captivated by your performance and instantly became a fan of your music and your love of Coldplay.
So
which is what
this.
I feel like is our...
What was it for you? Like, when did you fall in love with them?
Coldplay?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Just a long, long time ago. I think my dad was the first person to introduce me to Coldplay back when I was a child, I believe. So I've been listening to them for, like, you know, decades. They were one of my very first influences when it came to writing my own stuff. But yeah, I feel like we share that deep, deep love of Coldplay.
I was very sheltered before discovering Coldplay. I think a lot of the music I heard was my father's, and I idolized his voice to the point where I finally discovered a band of my own, right, that I fell in love with. And Chris Martin, I've realized this over the last couple of years, it was way more than just the music. He was there for me, like, throughout my whole childhood, just being able to listen to the songs and like the uplifting messages that they provide.
Yes.
I'm sure you love it too, the consistency of the fact that it's just been the same 4 guys, like 20 something years now.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, don't even get me started on Will Champion, the backbone of the band. No, you're right. Coldplay has such an uplifting message. And I think that like their songs are spiritual too.
Yeah.
And I find that with your music as well, because it's so like bare bones, like it's so vulnerable. I have the same thing where, you know, my music was my dad's and I almost felt bad for liking other music. But yeah, it's important to like find your own influences and follow them. And I hear Coldplay heavily in your music. Like I don't hear, you know, Chris Martin. I don't, not in a plagiarizing way, but just in like the production of the like soft muted piano tones and like the really vulnerable lyrics and even your voice, like your range is like Chris Martin. So it's beautiful for me.
Oh, thank you.
Personally.
You like my Craigslist piano. That means a lot to me. It somehow sounds like some of my influences, but I just got so lucky like finding that.
A Craigslist piano.
Yeah. Shout out to Craigslist. It was completely free.
Holy moly.
Psychologically, it was a very difficult day, but the piano itself was, somebody just needed to get rid of it. And I threw some fabric in it. And that's how I can make it sound underwater in a majority of my records. And I think it's more of like the soundscape that I'm able to do and the frequencies that I try to stay away from, it just brings me comfort. Like there's a lot of noise that is overstimulating for me. And so it really means a lot when I'm creating my own music to like take out those frequencies that are naturally painful to me. I think that's probably why I put that sheet in there to quiet the piano down.
It's so true. I'm doing some music lessons with a 4-year-old right now, actually, and he's playing drums. And I was telling him that because he gets the same thing, like overstimulation from those frequencies. And I was teaching him how to put sweaters on top of all the drums. And he's like, oh, that sounds different. And he's like, I can play. So it's true. Like I get the same thing with sound.
Yeah.
Wow. And yeah, I love the videos that you share where it's like a piano, but then it's just like in your kitchen.
Like my one room.
It's so funny the priorities of a musician. It's like I need the piano. Like I don't have any space, but like this is the priority. There's a piano in the kitchen.
I haven't even named her yet, but I gotta say, like that piano has saved my life countless times. I mean, it just means so much to know that, like in the hardest of times, that you can have a relationship with music or your instruments. I'm sure you have the same for those four right there. Five, sorry. Jeez.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, that, there's a banjo here that I have. This is not ours. I'm like, how did this get here? This is my husband just like collects instruments and they just show up one day. But anyway, it's true.
Yeah,
developing a relationship with your own instrument.
Absolutely. And just figuring out what that means for you. And so I think I have to play a handful of hours every couple of days or I'm going to go crazy. So it's nice to have it right next to my in the kitchen of sorts.
Yeah. Accessibility. So I'm curious, I'm familiar with your music, but I'm curious to hear more about how you developed a relationship with songwriting to begin with. Can you tell me, are you from LA as well?
Born and raised.
Born and raised.
Found a piano at 6 and hid behind it for many years and taught myself my own theory that does not make sense whatsoever. And but again, you know, you have your own relationship with the instrument, and I was just able to lean on music. I then developed like this interest in scoring. So I got a couple different programs and just wanted to understand how I was feeling, and it never was singing. It was never songwriting. It was just the music itself, I would say, for 11 years. I mean, it was only until later on that I realized how important it is to, if there's something that you have to say that is weighing on you, how to find your own voice and figure out how to convey this in a way that it can actually lift the weight off of you by singing it. And I think that's what caused the necessity to teach myself how to sing. And so I just kind of, I took a year in Boston at this college and taught myself how to play guitar and sing just on the street with like the one or two chords I knew. And yeah, I'm still like figuring out my voice. I'm sure you can relate. Mm-hmm. It's very weird to listen to your voice back.
Yeah. It's crazy. Actually, that's one of the questions I have for you is about finding your voice and whether you have found it. You know, that's a kind of a silly question because I think both of us know that like it's a whole lifelong journey of finding your voice. But as a songwriter and especially as someone who, like you said, is lifting a weight off of yourself by singing, that voice changes as you grow into yourself as an artist and a songwriter and a musician. So did it take a while for you to find your voice to begin with? And then like, what is it looking like now? How has that journey been for you?
I such a thoughtful question. I definitely didn't sing in the healthiest of ways, I would say, up until 2019, to be honest with you. I had this mentality. It definitely comes from performing on the streets where like you don't really learn how to take care of yourself first. You learn how to make a living first. And so, I mean, I would go from street performing for 8 hours to a country club gig, 3-4 hours straight. And every night I would come home and like thrash my voice. And I would just feel so insecure that I didn't know how to sing the right way, quote unquote. Right. And it took the pandemic to, I think I started I stopped trying. I think I stopped trying to impress.
I love that.
I'm sure you understand the Los Angeles. There are many major cities that provide this, but like this pressure to perform and improve your value to the people in the room. And so sometimes, as I taught myself to sing, I would come up with runs and I would teach myself how to sing in a way that's like, oh, that's not Dylan. That's not me. That's trying to be the best vocalist. And it really did take that pandemic and a song of mine called If That's All Right, that was like two guitars. Mm-hmm. It's a demo and I'm whispering my way through it to realize that, oh, this has to be for me. And I actually find myself to be such like a intimate, vulnerable person that doesn't need to shout from the top of the rooftops like how I'm feeling, the way in which I used to, literally like shouting on the street. And so it's just the last couple of years really that I learned that it has to be, you know, what are you able to do every night on the road? That's a very important thing. Like, how can you sing in the best of ways to be able to do this all the time? But also, like, how are you actually feeling? And I've been so disconnected from that for years through just trying to like work my way through trauma and survive through certain things that were happening. And now I get to, I have this relationship where I have nothing to prove, and including to myself. Like I just, if there's a thought that I'm willing to receive at any given moment, I try to record it as soon as possible. And it's usually like I'm not trying to sing anymore. I'm just trying to like get the thought out, which can be very soft spoken, I guess.
Yeah. There's definitely a difference between sharing and feeling the need to be heard. I'd imagine I didn't do a ton of busking or street performing in my youth, but I'd imagine that it's especially in a city like LA or Boston, it's like you're fighting to be heard. And yeah, it's true. Like when you're saying about If That's All Right, like a demo with your whispering through it, and you realize, like, you know, in terms of recording, it's like, I have this microphone for a reason. Like, people are going to hear me and people are going to hear what I am sharing with them if they are wanting to receive it.
Yes.
But yeah, it's crazy. And so you started on piano, you taught yourself how to sing. And then how did songwriting come into play? And like, how old were you when you started? You said you were six when you started playing piano, and how did writing start?
It's funny. Lyrics are the hardest part for me, and they always have been. And I could trace that back to like sitting in a
movie. Are you serious?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Your lyrics are. I listened to your whole EP today when I was driving, and your lyrics are like, they feel effortless to me.
That's very kind. I am very meticulous and neurotic, and I have a document in my phone called 12-month stream of consciousness, where every day I'm just like getting all the thoughts out, and then it's sifting through that. But I mean, I can trace this back to it's connected to mental health related issues of like the earliest memories of seeing a movie in a theater and not being able to understand what was happening if it was just dialogue driven. And then, you know, you go in the car and you're listening to the radio, and I still had that issue with music of I'm a feeling guy. Like I definitely need to work really hard to pay attention to what it is that the message that this singer is trying to convey. And just throughout all forms of art, I have felt disconnected with words, and also felt very, at times it can feel like a handicap of, creating my own words and figuring out the best way to articulate that the best way I want in music. So it's very kind of you to say that, but, I definitely realized that because of these issues that I struggle with, I cannot force this. I have enough 10,000 hours or so at this point where it feels like a message is being broadcast to me now, where I don't have to like figure out what to say, where I let the feeling sit long enough where it has to be a lyric, or like it just like mentally gets circled a million times, and that just ends up being the lyric. So any lyrics that you want to bring up from that project that you so kindly listened to today is from that process of getting out of my own way and just stop trying to make lyrics. Just try to try to work through this emotion and be honest with yourself. I feel like I'm really trying to call myself out more and take responsibility, take ownership for my feelings. And the biggest thing, the biggest radar that I have, the moment where I know I have a lyric, is when I'm deeply uncomfortable. Like if when I like when
I'm familiar
I am just like,
with that feeling.
I'm sure you have this frequently. And it's like when we have that, I feel like it's the ultimate moment if we're gambling, just to double down. And it doesn't even matter if it's right or perfect in itself. There are some lyrics from recently that are so wrong in that sense, but they are how I feel about myself, and I have to get them out in some way. Do you struggle as well with words?
Well, it's interesting. I'm kind of the opposite. I am very neurotic, but I'm a, you know, like you said, you're a feeling person. You're a big feeling person, and I'm a big feeling person as well. But I've always had a fascination with words. And before I was a songwriter, I was a writer. Like even in my youth, I wanted to write novels. I wanted to write essays, and I was fascinated with language and poetry. And so I think I naturally transitioned to being a songwriter in that way, where sometimes I struggle more with the music than I do the lyrics. Like I could write lyrics for days and years.
Wow.
And I am neurotic, so I use all those techniques where, like, my husband and I sometimes will get into disputes because he's so music driven and so creative, and I want to rhyme everything. Like, I want like an internal rhyme in every line.
Of course.
I want I'm using all of these techniques where I'm like, this needs to be like this, and he's like, no, it doesn't. It can just be whatever, and he's more focused on the feeling and the sound. But in a way, you know, I am very meticulous as well in that regard. But, when you talk about like being uncomfortable, I'm very familiar with that feeling and the vulnerability of writing, especially when you're an artist like yourself that like literally wears their heart on their shoulder and just pours everything out in a song, which I think is the most authentic and the most important part of music in a way. It really puts you in a really uncomfortable spot. But I think that's just part of it. I just read this Joni Mitchell quote the other day that was like, I write personal lyrics because I want other people to understand how I and how other people feel, you know? Like,
wow.
When you talk about the you know, the string that attaches mental health and music, which is a big part of your career, I know. That's a big part of it. It's like we all just want to feel connected to art and connected to people. And I think that lyrics in particular, like they can bridge that gap. But yeah, I think that's something that you do effortlessly and you don't even realize it.
Well, I love that you brought up Joni Mitchell because I think she is a great example.
Our girl.
It's a great example of somebody who is so brilliantly articulate, and it feels effortless. It really does. I think that I've learned that it's about being willing to receive it too. As I am definitely, or I'm trying to work on this. I want to be more of a consumer than I am a creator. I want to make sure I'm still falling in love with receiving messages in general. And, mm-hmm. and it's like this relationship you have to have with the person that made the song that you're listening to, where as the listener, you have to be willing to receive it. And that person has to be willing to be vulnerable enough to share it in the right way that hits you in the right moment. Mm-hmm. And it's,
and they need to be able to be open enough to receive the song itself.
Exactly.
Know?
And I'm,
it's like you're saying, getting out of your own way.
Happy to tell you that I'm responsible for not letting myself receive so many messages. And so I'm sure you feel like this too. It's really nice to feel like a kid again sometimes as a creator. Like every once in a while a song will hit me hard and like out of nowhere help me understand that this is what it's for. Because I'm sure Phoenix, you understand, and your husband does as well, that how lonely it is to be a content creator these days and questioning about the void and if anyone's out there listening. And I think it definitely like recenters me when I just sit down and instead of vent about the world, I just like try to participate and receive something myself. And
Yeah, it's a very, 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 very important part of it. And yeah, like you're saying, the void, I feel like the void doesn't exist. It just exists in our head. You know, it's difficult to be a creative person in general these days with social media and all of those crazy monsters. But I wanted to ask you, do you remember the first song you ever wrote? Like the very first song?
The first song.
And if you do, you can tell me about it if you want.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's heartwarming. It's heartbreaking. It's, I had discovered that I got accepted to go to Berkeley, and only because, at the time, my father had set aside some money through his successes, and I was very grateful at the time to feel like, oh, I can learn the right terminology now, right? I can go out there and make him proud. And anyways, to have like one last trip together, we drove to the desert, and I didn't know this at the time because I'm, you know, this naive child, but he wanted an escape. He needed one from the living situation he was in with my stepmother at the time. And so he packed all of his musical gear and threw it in his car and asked me if I wanted to join him. And we spent like 72 hours crafting something. Like I could hear just how inspired he was because he was a TV composer for so long, and it's been decades since he like worked on like a song with somebody. And we definitely bonded so well over that trip, and we made this song called Lost and Found that is nowhere, and I'm grateful for that, but nowhere to be found right now.
It's lost
It's yeah. Just lost, period. And I funny enough, those lyrics at the time, I was talking about my relationship with him and my fear of leaving him and disappointing him, and I was unable to understand that it was a very toxic relationship that was actually happening, and the situation was I was like a pawn in so many different like familial battles that were going on, and but I choose to look at the past, including this memory, as a positive experience, despite just how much pain and heartbreak it brought and trauma, because it was like the first seed that I planted of, oh wow, I think I'm ready to go out into the world and maybe try something. And I at the time trusted him with that, and we don't have a relationship now, but I'll never know if he knew that I was talking about him. But it was my first opportunity at trying that, putting words to paper, and although it is incredibly challenging for me, like I shared with you, it's so much fun. I'm sure you relate to this, when you feel like you get the feeling right, like when the three or four words, whatever it is, when that stanza comes out of you. And I think even though I had zero experience at that time, I think I just needed to go through that and cope through all this big change that was happening at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's beautiful. I didn't realize that by the time you had gotten into Berkeley, you hadn't written a song yet in terms of lyrics.
Oh, man.
And I also didn't realize that your dad was a TV composer. I had no idea that your dad was a musician.
He was the greatest guitarist it still is, like some of the most incredible musicianship I've ever gotten the chance to witness. And my only regret is how much I idolized the person, and I think that I've learned so much because I saw firsthand a representation of somebody that only had his relationship to music. And I think a lot of the conversation today is on the other side of that spectrum of like like we don't talk about the hustle mentality that ends up burning you out so much that you absolutely forget how to let love in, you know? Like I was related to the most talented, still am, human being I've ever met, but the most bitter and the most regretful and the most shameful, and I was, all of that was passed on to me. So I feel like I have this responsibility to have a healthy relationship with music. If I had it my way, Phoenix, I would go in a an isolated closet and record for days and make my cinematic universe of the 50-something songs that I'm working on right now. And I would just do this forever until I die. And I think that that is something I need to be mindful of. It's something I learned from him. And I understand that, like, there was so much negativity in what happened, but it did plant that seed in how to fall in love with music, how to have your own relationship with it, how to make sure that it is as healthy as it can be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're doing a good job of finding that balance between hustle and, like, the love for your creativity and taking care of yourself and your physical and mental health. And sometimes, as tough as it is, I think having a bad example of something can often be a good thing if you take that and learn from it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. And my dad is a musician as well. And we definitely have some similarities between us, but yeah, just try to do better and move on. And I want to talk about Berklee too. I like how you casually just slipped in, like, oh, I went to this college.
Oh man, you should have seen my, cause again, I had never written a song, as you said. Like, I can't believe I got in either. I came to this audition with this 11/8 time signature, 7-minute score. And I muted the piano, and then I asked if I could play along with the composition. And I think that they thought, this guy's crazy, and we don't know whether we should accept Dylan or file a restraining order, so he can't be in the building.
Did you write the 11/8 score?
Yeah.
You did?
I had to drop out of high school for a bit to score this Chapman University short film, and I really thought that's what I was going to do. It's always with you, you know, like, I definitely look up to Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross and how they have transitioned into film and TV. But to be honest with you, the only reason I did any of that was because, the shows that my father was working on at the time, like, he had raised me into thinking that I was going to take over this business. And I started scoring episodes of shows and realizing, oh, this isn't healthy. And I don't want to feel owed anything. So getting into the college was the greatest experience, because I felt like there was something that I had of value. And unfortunately, you know, I couldn't afford to spend any more time there. But the year I had was, I mean, I was making friends with the instructors and sitting on the side, and in the songwriting classes, I was like presenting Pro Tools sessions of these whole orchestral arrangements that I didn't need to do. And I just wanted to be challenged. I wanted to, my brain moves so fast and there's so much I want to learn. And to have that year there was a blessing. And I'm also happy to be this representation, because I only took 1 year, that,
yeah,
even if you don't go, even if they reject you because they're ridiculous with their percentage in terms of acceptance rate, like, I've learned everything I need to know on that street in Santa Monica, in the subway of Boston, in downtown Burbank, in my random sessions I would throw myself into. There's like a street smart that definitely matters, I would say, equally to any education one can receive.
Yeah. Experience versus education, and being willing to put yourself into those uncomfortable situations to be able to grow. That is really what education is, you know, putting yourself into an uncomfortable and oftentimes very expensive, far too expensive situation in order to grow and learn. And you did the same thing, just on the other side. It's funny, I had Bonnie Hayes, the previous chair of the songwriting department at Berklee, on the podcast, and I don't know if I should say this, but she won't listen. But before we started the interview, she was like, oh yeah, like, I tell students these days, like, don't go. Like, don't go to Berklee.
Wow.
It's too expensive. You can figure this all out yourself if you're, you know, willing and open, which I thought was hilarious. She's no longer the chair, but is still working with some of the students. And she's like, I tell them not to go. Which I was like, you know, that makes total sense. And as someone who has a degree from Berklee in songwriting, like, you know, I'm very, very grateful to have had that experience. But, you know, these days I look at it more like I value the experience almost more than the education. I'm like, you know,
yeah.
I met my husband. I have this community of musicians, and, you know, I could have built that myself and I could have met somebody else somewhere, but, you know, it's the debt. The debt is oftentimes not worth it. And yeah, it's funny. We call, I call it like pulling a John Mayer. Yeah. You pulled a John Mayer and look at you now, like successful one semester in LA. Yeah, I think maybe even less, but that's interesting. So did you originally go for film scoring, or did you intend to study songwriting?
Pro music sounded really great, because yeah, you can do
just
all of
open-ended,
all of the above. I did not fully declare it. I think I was at the top of the sophomore year. I was ready to decide it all, and I was feeling really good about juggling film scoring, juggling performance and songwriting. And
film scoring is like the most intense what do you call it, major at Berkeley, I think, aside from like production and engineering. But film scoring was, you know, to be able to juggle that and something else is, you know, pretty admirable in terms of your motivation.
Oh, I love it all. I'm sure you probably wanted to dip your toes in every single major over there and just couldn't, you know.
I'm a weirdo, and I was completely content with songwriting. I started studying songwriting at an educational level when I was in high school, and I wanted nothing else. Songwriting is like my best friend, and I never want to do anything else. I'm just a weirdo. I declared my major in my second semester, like the earliest possible time, because I was just like, this is what I want to do. But, you know, I put myself into all my eggs into one basket.
Well, if you know, you know. that's
and
incredible.
Here I am. I have
and
a
what is a song?
About songwriting.
What is a song about?
What is a song
without the writing? I truly think that is the most, other than instrumentation, other than how sexy the production sounds. It's like, what are we trying to say? And I respect you a lot for, I guess, like, making that your full focus. Like, sometimes I feel like my ADHD comes up to the surface and it's like, oh, I can do it all. But is that actually a healthy usage of your time?
Well, I think it is. I think you're extremely talented, like it said in your bio, multi-instrumentalist, producer, advocate. You have all of these things that you're focusing on, and yet from where I'm standing, everything is cohesive and everything makes sense about what you're doing. Even when you're talking about how your dad was a composer and like these 11-8 scores, and, you know, I didn't know that about you. I had assumed that you had just started playing piano and then started writing, and I didn't know this backstory. And now listening to the production of your music, it makes total sense that you have this background in like film scoring and composing.
Movies are everything.
It's so orchestral.
Yeah. I sometimes joke around about how I feel like I love movies more than music. And there is something really cool to try and tap into the cinematic influences. It all is connected, all of it. And I have a connection to comedy too, but nothing I ever want to pursue.
Yeah.
It's just
comedy is like my hobby. I say, I have this, like, I'm fully tapped into the stand-up comedy scene.
What is it like up there?
I think I'm funny. Oh, gosh. Well, sometimes we have comedy that comes to the local Legion. But no, it's pretty, pretty non-existent. I mean, we have comedy clubs in Vancouver, but not so much. I'm just like fully tapped into all these stand-up comedians and all their podcasts. And it's like music in a way. It's like an escape. It's like all I want to do is laugh, you know. It's the same thing. It's like with music, I think we want to make people feel, and comedians just want to make people laugh. And that's interesting though, that you have all these influences outside of music, like movies and comedy. And
I just love, even now, in terms of practicing self-care, like the ability to just go and see a movie, turn your phone off for 2 to 3 hours, and I've figured out, everyone has their own relationship with TV, film, whether people like to binge a whole season of something. I, because of how my brain is wired and how I feel like I need to work at all times, I think my relationship with cinema is now very healthy, because you can be inspired by anything, and I think that, like, screenplays, I always put, like, little screenplay moments into my songs, like, for movies that have inspired me, and I think that it's the only thing that has really managed to turn my brain off, as well as comedy. Like, I'm following, like you, like, all of those podcasts of these comedians just talking to each other. It's, for whatever reason, it's like comforting white noise, and listening to a different hustle that you, personally, I don't want anything to do with professionally. I just want to consume it and appreciate it for what it is. And it really does feel connected sometimes.
It's perspective. And I think watching movies as well is perspective. I have never been really a big movie person, but recently all I want to do is watch movies. And having grown up around, you know, in that scene, and especially just like living in LA in general, I'd imagine that was a big part of your life. And I can totally, it all makes sense to me. This full circle conversation, it's all making sense.
Just a big nerd, just a big old nerd.
I mean, aren't we all? But I want to ask you about your new EP. It's good. It's great. I love it. I love it.
I'm so relieved.
I blast your music in the car all the time, especially my favorite song off the new EP is probably Right, but also I've recently been getting into Waterfall. It's like, I would say to me, the most cinematic out of all of the new songs. But just, can you tell me a little bit about the songs, how they came about, how you recorded them? It's a deeply, deeply emotional album. But I know that that's, you know, most, if not all of your music, but just, can you tell me a little bit about what the experience was writing and recording that?
Yeah. Thank you so much for asking. I had decided, moving forward with projects, I wanted to be more intentional conceptually. I wanted to challenge myself as a songwriter to pay respect to other songs that I was writing. And I think that in a way I'm like casting my own movie with each EP that I do. And with When You're Feeling Blue, it just perfectly captured to me, in mentally speaking, like the pain that I was going through, but also the grace that I was trying to have in the process between multiple relationships. Waterfall specifically is the heaviest attempt at like addressing grief, I think, because of my collaborator Matt Romagna and I, when we came together, we took two stories of our own and merged them into one to try and just heal through the pain that we were both experiencing and didn't even realize it. And it just felt intentional to try and capture that with all five of those as a listening experience too, to be able to just like go back to the first one and understand that all five of these are intended to work alongside one another. That's the start of what I'm talking about with this decision to be more conceptual. This EP, which is conveniently timed, I guess, with the launch of the label and having walked away from what we were doing last year, every project now has this standard in my head to be, does this one singular song feel great to you? But like, does it make sense with the overall thesis statement that you are trying to convey? For example, this next project that I will be rolling out, every single song personifies me as a vehicle and taps into all of these issues with sexual trauma, with struggling to, have a healthy connection with another human being. And it, for whatever reason, it just made sense, like throughout each song, to continue these metaphors and this imagery that really does now at the end of it feel like its own cinematic world. And I think When You're Feeling Blue had to happen for me to work on myself and get more help and change the therapy that I was receiving and be willing to receive a more focused cycle of sessions that could help me through some things I was really struggling with. And now it just, you know, I don't listen to my music when it comes out, like afterwards, but I'm happy to talk about it and saying that I'm really proud of just the ability to hold myself accountable and put that out, because now, I mean, the everything coming after just gets more scary in its vulnerability in a good way. And it's always going to be this one that started that led the charge under this label.
Yeah, well, it's like you said earlier, like, you know that your lyrics and the music is best when it makes you feel uncomfortable. So being uncomfortable is actually a really good place to be when it comes to music. And it definitely is very cohesive. It's almost like each song on When You're Feeling Blue is like an extension of the last, in terms of the theme of it. And Waterfall is one of, definitely one of my favorites. And I really admire the way that you're able to completely put yourself out there in terms of grief and pain and suffering, but have it, come together in such a way that is just so beautiful. And it's almost like a film score in itself.
Oh, thank you.
I'm excited that you guys have launched your label, and I look forward to hearing what's next. And so from what I can tell, you have a very kind of close group of collaborators. And is this label yours? Is it like something that you guys have worked on together? And can you just speak to like working with a team of people and how important that is to you? And I've noticed in following your social media and everything is, you know, the one guy with the long hair.
Kirk God, as we call him.
He is a theme.
He's a god among men.
He's a main character.
Well, I'm happy you asked that. I really sometimes feel like I'm a band, but I happen to be my name and as a solo artist.
You just have your support, like you've got your core group. It's, you know,
I believe in Kirk.
You're supporting each other.
I believe in Kirk. I mean, he's going to hate me so much for saying this on this podcast, but like there was a time where he's a singer-songwriter as well. And he has so much talent. And I ever since I met him, like he came up to me on the street of downtown Burbank and it, like his wife like encouraged him to come up to me, and I was doing a Tom Petty song. Conveniently, his favorite artist is Tom Petty. That's almost 10 years now. I can safely say I believe in his ability musically, but also as a graphic designer and also in so many other ways as a mm-hmm. co-label owner. Like, I believe in his ability to succeed just as much as me, if not more than me at times. Like, I look at the people in my life that have my manager Jay and Kirk, like those two people mm-hmm. and myself, the three of us are like the heads of this label right now. And I look at Jay, who has done so much more than just manage my neurotic ass the last few years. It's like he started his own label and he has a partner overseas and he's like doing all this amazing thing. And I just think like, okay, that's what's the coolest thing about this is if I ever quote unquote win in some way, we do. And I get the opportunity to split that check and I get the opportunity to look at my closest people, my best friends in the eyes and like thank them for their work and treat them, respect them for their time in the way that I really want to. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's a tight knit. I'm happy you picked up on that. I mean, I love all my friends are creators and everybody's like the most talented people I know. And for whatever reason, I've just holed myself up and found this way where I can create music where a lot of it's isolated and a lot of it's shit I'm trying to work through, which happens to be more helpful alone sometimes. And then I get to like walk out of my cave and call Matt, like I said, for the Absolutely. Waterfall tracks or the Serotonins or the Get More Rests. Like, he is incredible. Or Kirk, who co-wrote Hurricane with me, which is also on this project. Mm-hmm. It can all exist. And I think that I feel so encouraged by my collaborators, Jordan as well, who did the last two EPs with us. I feel encouraged to write alone, which is really important to me, that I sometimes you need to. Sometimes you need to go to your best friend. Sometimes with this next project that I have mentioned to you, a lot of these thoughts are, I imagine they would make the room uncomfortable if you're in a co-write, like a LA pop, like, let's write another, I don't know, love song anthem. I can't do words right now. But I think, like, I'm a huge fan of the abnormal and the real shit. And I think that I have to give myself a voice. And I'm so grateful that, like, the people closest to me let me do that, but also, like, listen so well, and we can grow together in the things that we're all going through as songwriters. Like, there's a way where even if you're writing for an artist, like, you can, it can be collaborative, and we can all learn something of value in the process. So I'm happy that with Waterfall, I was coming from this place about my father, and Matt was coming from his place about a sibling, and it just works because grief is grief. There's so much that we can tap into to maybe grow closer to one another.
Yeah, absolutely. And like we were talking about receiving, being open to receiving songs, like spiritually, but also being open to receiving the best and worst parts of your collaborators and friends. And I think it's one of the most beautiful parts of music is, you know, having that mutual support and having those team members and friends that not only support you professionally, but also personally and challenge you, you know, being willing to open yourself up to that. But it is very apparent in, from what I can see, you putting yourself out there and always being mindful of, you know, recognizing the team that supports you. And, I mean, even communicating with Jay, he seems absolutely lovely and very on the ball, and seems like you've surrounded yourself with some really incredible people. And it is important because sometimes we need to be called out, and sometimes we need to just be, you know, brought in and be given a hug and supported in a different way. And when you find those people that are not toxic in your life, musically and professionally and personally, like I said, it's all just growth in a positive way. So congratulations on the new record label, and I just love it. You're doing great things.
I appreciate your support. It's been an honor to, I know we had that show and then the podcast, but I mean, you as well as the two of you are so gifted at your crafts and also the way that you support one another too. Like we're talking about, like, it's important to have those people, whether you work with this person that I'm talking about or whether you're just friends, like whoever it is, unconditional love matters so much. And you and I both know, like, how competitive this industry is. Like, I'm so grateful to have found the few that understand. And I'm also so grateful that you have as well. I'd love to ask how your fulfillment level is right now creatively. Like, is this
my fulfillment level?
Yeah. Like, is this a tricky time right now, or are you feeling like incredibly inspired?
You know, thanks for saying that, and having a husband who is also a musician and a songwriter, people often make jokes about, like, oh, you know, that must be difficult. And it's like, you know, any relationship is difficult, but I think it's actually really beautiful to be with someone who can understand you. You can have that mutual understanding creatively. So it's such a blessing to have a partner that, you know, is kind of on the same plane as me and that can challenge me in ways that other people couldn't. It's always, it's like it comes in waves creatively. I currently am having a hard time just writing, or not writing, but just finishing. But this is like a common theme in my life, is like I have so many songs that I'm really curious about and want to complete and have it be cohesive, but I'm finding it hard to finish and to hold myself accountable in that way. To, I don't know. It's just like I write a verse and a chorus and then I'm like, I'm hungry. and then I forget about it for the next 12 years. And then I'm like, oh, this is a cool verse. You know, I don't know. I'm all over the place, but I feel fulfilled creatively by, you know, having all these different things like this podcast that are just like, just talking to songwriters and artists is really inspiring to me. And I take so much away from these conversations, but thanks for asking.
How does it feel? I
appreciate it.
I actually, forgive me for saying, I love your process. So I'm assuming when you come back to whatever song you, let's say 12 years ago or last week.
Showing my age.
But if you go back to something and you figure out how to finish it, I'm sure you've done that so many times, right? Like, is that not the craziest feeling in the world? Like the
it's,
most heavenly?
It's wild.
I hope this is okay to say. I that's very healthy to me that you have this, I really look up to that, this ability to like step away, knowing something is unfinished, but you did it, whatever you needed to do in that moment. I imagine that feels so good. Like when you come back and you end up finishing that.
Yeah. And I think the longer time, you know, like there's a song on my album that I started writing when I was 17. And for some reason it was always in the back of my mind, but I was like, there's something with that song. It's unfinished. I don't like it. And then, but every time I sat down on the piano, I would start playing it. And then I remember I was playing it to Justin and he said the last line of the chorus needs to be this. And instantly like it clicked in my brain. And like, that's now the name of the song. It's my favorite song on the album. It's like, you know, I'm fully like past the context of the song in terms of like my life and where I was then and where I am now. But like now I'm able to play the song and listen to it and have a different perspective and think about different things. And it's wild as a writer to be somewhere in your life and start writing a song about something and then come back to it years later and be able to like approach it from a completely different point and in a healthier way. It's like, I don't know, it's full circle. And it happens to me a lot, I think, just because I lack the motivation to finish a song in the moment. Like, I don't know what it is, but
it almost feels spiritual.
It's all a journey.
Like we're not
spiritual.
Like we're not in charge at all. Like
what
you're sharing just happened to me the other day, realizing 3 years ago that there was a piece of music that really touched me. And then I killed it for whatever reason. I just like threw it away.
You killed it.
I murdered it. I took it out back and shot it. And sorry for all the listeners. It was a very touching COVID, like somebody that meant so much to me. I'm sitting on the lawn and I'm crying and they're stuck inside and they have COVID. And it was like this, I don't know how to help, right? Mentality. And I revisited it recently and tweaked a couple things or equivalent to how he said that line needs to be changed. Mm-hmm. I did the same thing to myself and thought, oh, I think I needed these 3 years I don't think we ever fully forget any pieces of work that we make. Like we store it as far back as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. But man, it hit me and it made me emotional that day. And it makes me so happy to be able to normalize in a world where we talk about, oh, we just wrote that in 30 minutes and it's like the next hit.
Right.
I'm so happy to be that guy that's like, no, 3 years.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Let it marinate, slow cook that song. Because if it's not, sometimes I feel like it's not about being right or wrong, but are you and I, like, are we ready yet? So I really admire your process. I think we have that in common. And I also, I feel you on the struggles that can come from that, because like, that's the best feeling in the world is being a finisher. I'm not always fully ready to finish it.
Again, it's like, am I ready to receive the song? Obviously not yet. I need to wait 3 years or 12. But yeah, it reminds me of like taking a test, and it's like, if you don't remember the answer to this question, then, you know, just move on and come back to it. You know, it's the same sort of thing.
Wow.
So I know you're going to need to go soon. I want to end the podcast with asking a question that I ask all my guests. It's a two-parter, and that is, what advice would you give to your younger self in regards to songwriting, and what advice would you give to your future self?
In regards to songwriting?
Mm-hmm.
Oof.
Or just okay. music okay. or, you know, whatever comes to mind.
What an amazing way to end it. You're going to make me use my brain power right now. I think...
I can't wait.
Younger me is so stubborn, Phoenix. He is unwilling to listen. So I think the thing that would cut through the most is if it, whatever you're going through, or if you're struggling creatively, like if it doesn't get better in that moment, you will. I think younger me has such a hard time walking away from something that doesn't make sense, something that is irrational, any kind of big life changes that were happening, or creatively speaking, like the inability to, I couldn't make any words at that point, but I would say younger me, like these situations you're in, and even your ability to, your relationship with music at that point, if this doesn't get better right now, you will grow through this and collect what you need through time to get to, I guess, where I'm at right now. Because mm-hmm. I think that it's the hardest thing in the world to accept that something maybe won't get fixed in the moment, or mm-hmm. won't even be better in general. But I think we do.
I like that. Take what you need and move forward.
Future me. I think the thing I'm learning right now, and the thing that I think is going to be a lifelong journey of accepting, is I don't feel responsible for these songs anymore. I've fully gotten out of my own way, but now I just need to be more graceful with myself when the wave hits me. I think future me is probably going to figure out a way to balance that and healthily approach recording that song that smacks me in the face. Because current me, even though I could tell you about all of these plans I have, and there's no pressure to write today, current me, like if there's an inspiration that hits me, I'm overwhelmed and overstimulated, and I don't know if I can succeed at doing everything. And also now this unexpected song, mm-hmm. I have faith in the process that future me will figure out, like, oh, this huge tidal wave that's about to hit you. Okay. You can dive in for like an hour or two and step away. And, it's still going to feel like there's the spark later on. And this is okay. You don't have to like sit in your chair for 18 hours to feel valuable, you know,
don't like have to lock yourself in the closet.
No,
I see a lot of closet recording going on with you.
It's all closet recordings, all of it.
Which I love, but sometimes you need to, you know, get out of the closet. Happy Pride Month.
Happy Pride Month, everybody. Sometimes you need to just barge open that. Yeah,
metaphorically.
I have a patient. It's weird. I can't explain it to you right now because I'm currently struggling with it. But I just have this weird sense of calm about, like, okay, that's what doing this, and you and I are going to experience this for the rest of our lives. Should we continue to pursue this, is like, we need to make sure this is normalized, that this is longevity. Mm-hmm. You don't have to write this week if it's going to kill you. You don't have to, like, yeah. You can take as much time as you need, because you are an artist, not because of the money coming in on the streams or the follows online. You're an artist because it's like a way of life. And yes. I have faith that I'll be able to accept that more in the future.
And it doesn't go away, even if you know, it's not like you're only a songwriter or an artist if you sit in your chair for 18 hours or meet this quota. You know, you are an artist, you're a musician just because you are.
And yeah.
You don't have to prove that. Like you said earlier, you don't have to prove anything to anyone else, and you don't have to prove anything to yourself. You just are. And that's a beautiful thing. And I think you're really touching on finding a healthy balance between life and music. And it's a common theme that I talk to artists about a lot. And I like that, giving yourself grace. That's beautiful.
Thank you so much. I have my bad days, but I'm feeling good today.
Yeah, me too. Good. I'm glad. We're feeling good. I'm glad. Yeah, this has been a really inspiring conversation, and I appreciate you taking the time And yeah, congratulations again. Everybody go stream when you're feeling blue. Did I just say it incorrectly?
Oh, no, that's it, I think, yes.
You're feeling blue?
Yes.
You're like, I forget the name of my own album.
What is the name of that?
I don't listen to the songs anymore.
I banish myself from listening. No, yeah. Thank you so much. I hope we can all grab coffee someday or maybe even do a show again. That would be so much fun.
That would be incredible. Yeah, my husband and I live just north of California, so we always talk about heading down to LA. I was really overwhelmed when I went to LA, to be honest. I was like, wow, this is a whole new world.
Yep.
As Little Mermaid said.
Gotta love Ariel. She, sorry about that noise. I think that I am ready to step away from LA and see what else is out there. I'm really excited to entertain that. It's all I know. So I don't blame you. And if you guys ever need to talk about, because we all have to figure out our own presence in LA. Like at some point in our careers, we have to figure out how to, just like I have to make it out to you guys. And we all have to hopefully visit the East Coast and maybe Europe. You figure out what, you figure out what works for you. And if there's anything I can do in terms of helping like alleviate stresses surrounding LA, and also maybe validating stresses, and because it is what it is. Like, I'm more than happy to talk to you guys in the future about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. We want to get down there. And, I know a bunch of venues up in Vancouver. It'd be great to have you in our neck of the woods, but please tell people how is the best way to support you?
The best way to support me would be to wherever you listen to music, just search Dylan Dunlap. I am Dylan Dunlap is every social media platform. And yeah, I really appreciate this conversation. I'm sure you were inspired to do this because of maybe conversations that you felt like you weren't having in life. And I resonate with you. And the fact that you thought of me to do this means the world to me. So thank you.